Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi everyone, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In today's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with Summit Health's Chief Quality Officer, Dr. Ashish Parikh, and Chief of Population Health, Dr. Jamie Reedy. In the conversation, we discussed value-based care programs and contracts within Summit Health and what it takes to invest and implement these programs into your healthcare organization. Hello, Dr. Parikh and Dr. Reedy. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. So to get started, can each of you just share what your roles are at Summit Health and the mission of the organization?
Sure. So our vision is actually to build healthier, kinder communities. And our mission is to treat everyone like family and deliver, you know, high quality connected care every time. And so in my role as Chief Quality Officer, I try to make sure that every clinical strategy and protocol we have puts the patient first. And then in my role in population health with my partner, Dr. Reedy, we try to make sure that we move the group along in the value journey and along the way make every single provider and every person in the group a value-based believer. I'll hand it to Dr. Reedy.
Hi, Jamie Reedy, Chief of Population Health for Summit Health, a family physician by background, responsible for our clinical relationships with all of our health plan partners with whom we have value-based contracts, making sure that we are delivering the care we promise to provide and developing the clinical programs at Summit that help support our physicians in the journey toward providing great care.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, this might be a loaded question for either of you who would wish to answer. Can we just dissect pretty much the basis of the conversation? Can we dissect the practice of value-based care and how it has evolved in the last few years in healthcare, which, you know, putting COVID into effect, because I know COVID has definitely had an influence on a number of things in healthcare.
Sure. I can start with, I guess when you define value-based care, I think it's really three different things. One is doing the right thing for every patient. So right care at the right time in the right setting, right? If you just focus on that, you automatically deliver value-based care. I think the second part of it is taking accountability for a set population, right? Giving great care, not just the people who come in to see you, but also identifying those people that aren't coming in and need care and engaging them and bringing them in for their needed care. And lastly, I think it's aligning the incentives so that the right choice becomes the easiest choice, whether it's from the patient point of view, the provider point of view, the group point of view, the health system as a whole point of view. So I think that those are that's the crux of value-based care. And I think what's evolved in recent years is one is data, right? We now have the data to evaluate whether we're doing the right thing for every patient in the right setting at the right time, so that we can continue to improve on that. And the second thing that's evolved, I think, is the payment models, again, to align those incentives so that we can make the right choice, the easiest choice.
Thank you. Now, can either of you provide us some details on the 7 value-based contracts? Are these ACO contracts, bundled payments? And are you a Medicare Shared Savings Program ACO, and have you taken on two-sided risk? And if so, for how long? And I guess I could throw another question, because why not? lastly, what percentage of your revenues would you say come in through value-based contracts in contrast to fee-for-service? So if you'd like, I can split that up. I know that is a very long-winded question.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack, but I'll jump in, and then and Ashish can add anything I forget. So in our New Jersey market, we are actually participating in and managing 10 value-based contracts. And in our Oregon market, we have another 10. so lots of experience, and that's across all lines of business. Medicare traditional, Medicare Advantage, commercial, and Medicaid in our Oregon market. We are participating currently in our sixth and final year of the Next Generation ACO program with CMS, and we will transition January 1st of 2022 into the Medicare Shared Savings ACO. At this point in time, I'd say probably about 5% of our revenue is related to value-based care revenues, but it's rapidly growing. We actually got into commercial risk 10 years ago, long before we even jumped into a Medicare ACO. And every year for the last decade, the percent of our revenue has been increasing. And now with our merger with CityMD and the growth of our attributed lives, that revenue is just going to continue to increase. To address your question about two-sided risk, the Next Generation ACO model has always been two-sided risk. We've always had substantial downside risk as part of that model. We've also had downside risk in two of our commercial ACO contracts for many, many, many years. So we're very familiar with managing against that risk.
And if I can add, we've used our long track record of high value, high quality care with our payers to negotiate our fee-for-service rates. So I'd say a significant chunk of our fee-for-service revenue actually can be attributed to value-based care too.
That's right. They go hand in hand. That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys. Now this might be another long one. I'm sorry. So you decided to increase your investment in analytics as a way of managing your value-based contracts. So could either of you provide some detail on the problems you're responding to? Were you losing out on any shared savings? Were you not meeting quality metrics? Anything like that?
Sure. So we were relying solely on the data and reports that came to us from our health plans, which they, of course, were using claims data to analyze our performance across attribution, quality, utilization, cost. And then in our electronic medical record, we had clinical data, but we didn't have the ability to pull the data together. We had no tool or platform or vendor to combine that those two data sets, clinical and claims data, along with many other data sources externally like ADT data and so forth, to allow us to be more sophisticated about tracking and monitoring the success that we had across all of those metrics, quality measures, utilization, and cost. So we knew that in order for us to get to the next level in value and be able to truly have prospective knowledge of where our opportunities were to lower cost, we had to find the right solution, the analytics solution for us to be able to combine those data sets. And so we began a journey a number of years ago, talking to vendors in this space and really trying to find a partner that truly understood value-based care and value-based contracting and the features that we would need as part of an analytics platform to allow us to build on the success we had already had and very quickly identify the opportunities to improve across all of the metrics that the health plans were holding us accountable for.
Thank you. Now to dig a little deeper, could you provide some of your analytics investment, maybe the size of the investment and over how many years? And I guess in more simple terms, what sort of analytics do you work with a particular vendor or vendors?
Sure. So we are working with Arcadia. We signed a contract with Arcadia a couple of years ago. We did invest in a five-year agreement with Arcadia. We really wanted to invest together in our shared success. We have had a phenomenal relationship for a number of years as we've integrated a lot of data sets into the platform. We also were creative in the beginning when we negotiated the contract, and we included a monthly bucket of hours for utilizing Arcadia's very sophisticated and skilled analytics and insights team. We knew from the beginning that we couldn't just make an investment in a platform or software, that we needed to make investment in people as well. And we needed to accelerate our ability to use the platform and use the data. So while we are making investments at Summit, in building a very skilled and large value-based care analytics team, we also knew that that would take time. And so we partnered with Arcadia to utilize their experts who could both train our team, but also accelerate our learning of how to use the platform and how to identify those opportunities for us to build clinical programs and lower cost of care.
Great. Now, could either of you discuss the results of this investment?
Sure. So, over our 10-year journey, we've luckily always been successful in our value-based contracts and been able to enjoy shared savings and hit the quality benchmarks. But as you know, year over year, the benchmarks keep getting higher and higher. The market keeps moving ahead. So you have to continue to improve constantly. And so what our data analytics platform has done for us is it's allowed us to really hone in and pick the strategies that are working and reinvest them in further, find things that maybe aren't working as well and tweak them, and then help us align our incentives internally. For, you know, a couple examples I can give you, for example, with annual wellness visits, we wanted to see, you know, we'd invested a lot in those. We wanted to see, is there real impact on the population? And what we found was that our population that got annual wellness visits had significantly better quality gap closure and better outcomes, as well as they continued to stay attributed to us. And because of that, they had a better adherence and stickiness to the group. Another example would be how we used our data analytics to improve the incentives that we're giving our providers. For example, now we are able to take each primary care provider's panel and figure out what their risk-adjusted admissions per thousand is, as well as their impact on our overall quality performance as a group. And based on those two things, we're able to incentivize the providers and give them actionable data to continue to improve themselves. So certainly, we've been able to use our data analytics investment to help us figure out how to continue to be successful.
Wonderful. Now, are either of you able to share some of your thoughts on the future of value-based contracts and contracting? And maybe what has your experience with your analytics and the investment you made taught you about value-based contracts? Kind of
sure. So we do believe that value-based care and contracting is here to stay. As we sit across the table from our health plan partners on a regular basis, as Dr. Parikh was saying earlier, they're really holding us accountable to value-based outcomes in order to maintain the fee schedules that we're paid as well. So it really does become a complete balance in terms of looking at our revenue and planning to be successful in both. And we're very fortunate at Summit that we've built a clinical model that allows us to be successful in both. We are a multi-specialty group that provides almost every specialty and every type of ancillary service under one tax ID and within one medical group, which is very convenient for patients. And keeping that care in the family at Summit, we've been able to show over the years that coordinated one-stop shopping type of care actually improves the patient experience, but also appropriately lowers the cost of care. And our health plan partners see that and reward us for that. So I think, you know, value-based care is not going to go away. The cost of healthcare continues to go up, and it's unaffordable for patients, it's unaffordable for employers, and it's not sustainable. And so the industry is going to continue to find ways of improving outcomes at lower costs. And that's true not just for our commercial and Medicare Advantage health plans, but it's true at the CMS, you know, Medicare level as well. I think where our analytics helps us, again, is we come to the table for those discussions very prepared. We have our own analytics that helps us identify the opportunities for an appropriate we do, you do model, which is what we call our relationships with the health plans. You know, what do you bring to the table? What do we bring to the table? And how can we share responsibility and accountability for managing patients? And having a full data set allows us to bring those opportunities to the table and have those discussions, which very positively inform our contract negotiations.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, CMS was brought up earlier in the conversation, but to kind of tie back into that, there have been calls to start reducing number of value-based programs, particularly those coming out of CMS. So do either of you think it's time to cut back on the number of value-based contracts?
So, you know, CMS created CMMI to experiment and figure out which models will work and test things out. I think it would be nice to go ahead and start, if not reducing the number of models, at least aligning what providers are held accountable to, right? From our point of view, as Jamie said, we have 20 value-based contracts, and if you look at them individually, we don't mind, you know, we want to have more value-based contracts with every one of our payers. But what would be great for us is to be able to make sure that our payers hold us accountable to the right population. Is it really the population that we should be responsible for? And then hold us accountable to meaningful measures that actually drive better care at a lower cost and then be appropriately rewarded for that. So I think that fewer models is not necessarily the right term, but I think aligning the way the methodology of these models would really help us and reduce the burden of reporting and calculating all this stuff and instead focus our efforts on really just continuing to improve care.
Okay, got it. Now, do either of you have any thoughts or insights into the current administration's policies on value-based contracts and the shift from volume to value? And is it even on the radar?
Well, the shift from volume to value is on everyone's radar. And, I think that shift and the focus on improving outcomes and rewarding providers who provide high value care is actually a bipartisan focus. I don't see it as any different under the current, Biden administration. I think that, Biden and his entire CMS and CMMI team are very focused on affordability. They're focused, as we were just referencing, on making sure that the models that they support, whether it's an ACO model or many of their bundled episode models, are actually being deployed in the right places. And I think that they're going to very significantly increase their focus on health inequities. There's been a lot of discussion around how we can, as provider groups, do a better job of collecting data related to health inequities and the social and demographic needs of our patients, and then how we can utilize that to improve the services that we deliver to our patients. So I think that what I'm seeing, at least from the folks I'm talking to in Washington, is just continued commitment on the journey toward value and a recognition that we've learned a lot over the years that CMS and CMMI have been supporting these models. And so I think they're just going to continue to refine and make them better and easier for provider groups to participate, easier to report, right? Dr. Parikh mentioned the reporting burden, which can be very substantial. And I think the latest proposed physician fee schedule has some really good changes in it that are going to help make it easier for us all to participate and do the right thing for our patients and minimize the costs related to participation in those value models.
Wonderful. Thank you. And that's actually all I had for both of you guys, but Dr. Parikh and Dr. Reedy, if you had anything else that either of you would like to share, maybe that we didn't touch base on.
For groups that may be thinking about going to value or afraid to go into value or afraid they're going to be forced into value, I think a couple pieces of advice from our experience. One is that they're not mutually exclusive, right? Fee-for-service and value are not mutually exclusive. And if you invest in things that will increase your revenue from preventive services and yet give your patients better outcomes, I think you can have a win-win situation, because that journey is going to be very variable in terms of which market you're in and which payers you work with. And the second part of that is that I think you have to be data driven, right? If you can figure out where it is that you have the greatest opportunities, you can continue to improve your outcomes for your patients while being successful as a healthcare provider.
That's exactly what I was going to end with. The data driven piece is so critical. We all have limited resources. We all have to make difficult decisions about where we invest and what types of programs that we build. So having a really robust combined clinical and claims data set that allows you to do that and make really intelligent decisions about where you place your investments is really critical on the journey toward value.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.